their worries and cares left behind. Oh, what a peaceful time. So that they may live a better life. What a joy divine. What a perfect state of mind. With their worries and cares left behind.
Celebrating 40 years of broadcasting, Morgan State University Public Radio, 88.9, WEAA FM and HD1, Baltimore.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. President Donald Trump is striking out against the lawyer representing a third woman who's come forward with allegations of sexual misconduct against Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh. NPR's Tamara Keith reports Kavanaugh denies these new allegations.
Michael Avenatti represents Julie Swetnick, who accuses Kavanaugh of sexual misconduct when they were in high school. Avenatti also represents Stormy Daniels, the adult film actress who claims to have had an affair with Trump. In a statement on Twitter, Trump called Avenatti a third-rate lawyer and total lowlife, quote, good at making false accusations like he did on me and he is now doing on Judge Brett Kavanaugh. The president continues to deny an affair with Daniels, but does admit to reimbursing his lawyer for a payment to keep her story quiet. In a statement about Swetnick's allegations, Kavanaugh said he doesn't know who she is and what she alleges never happened. Tamara Keith, NPR News, The White House.
The Republican chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, Chuck Grassley, says the panel's looking into the latest accusation.
Obviously, with this one, we have a contact, and our lawyers are on it right now. Our staff investigators, and I won't have anything because I can't say anything until they get done.
And looking ahead at tomorrow's hearing, Republican outgoing Senator Jeff Flake is urging his colleagues on both sides of the aisle to be decent. He says it's Congress's fault for the character assassinations and death threats against Kavanaugh and Christine Blasey Ford, the first woman to publicly accuse Kavanaugh of sexual misconduct.
I will say to these witnesses, these human beings, we owe you both a sincere apology. An apology is inadequate, of course, but it's a start. We can't very well undo the damage that has been done. But we can govern our own behavior as we go through this painful hearing tomorrow and in the days afterwards.
Again, Judge Kavanaugh fiercely denies he sexually assaulted or was sexually inappropriate toward anyone. Uber plans to shell out $148 million to settle a suit brought by all 50 state attorneys general and the District of Columbia over its handling of a 2016 data breach. NPR's Yuki Noguchi reports the breach exposed personal data of 25 million U.S. users, which Uber failed to disclose for over a year.
The attorneys general are cracking down on Uber, requiring it to pay the $148 million fine, as well as review its security and ethics policies. This settles a case stemming from a 2016 breach that included driver's license numbers, emails, and phone numbers of Uber users and drivers. The company then tried to keep the incident quiet by paying the hackers involved to delete the data. By not reporting the breach for a year, regulators say the company left its drivers vulnerable to financial fraud and identity theft. This settlement comes as Uber prepares to sell shares to the public for the first time next year.
That's NPR's Yuki Noguchi. This is NPR.
On the outer loop of the Beltway in the Catonsville area, the earlier crash near the exit for Route 40 has been cleared. The travel lanes are open, but it's still jammed heading from Liberty Road down to Route 40. Inner loop of the Beltway on the west side, meanwhile, you're on the brakes off and on between 95 and Security Boulevard. Then on the inner loop on the north side, it's a slow go heading from Greenspring Avenue around to Providence Road. On the northbound side of 95 in Howard County, you'll see the brake lights heading from Route 32 up to Route 100. Then on the northbound side of 95 in the city, traffic's below speed between Key Highway and the Fort McHenry Tunnel. Northbound side of 895, expect delays there traveling from the Harbor Tunnel Toll Plaza up to the Harbor Tunnel. Northbound side of the Baltimore-Washington Parkway, expect delays as you travel from Route 32 up to Route 175. On the southbound side, it's slow going from Route 32 down to Route 198. Also in the city, we have reports of a vehicle fire on Patapsco Avenue at Annapolis Road. This traffic update is a service of Mothers Against Drunk Driving. For more traffic information, log on to SigAlert.com. I'm Ron Balseric with your Baltimore area traffic.
88.9 FM reminds you that the views expressed on WEAA programs are those of participants and not necessarily those of Morgan State University, the staff, management, or underwriters of Baltimore's home for cool jazz. WEAA 88.9 FM.
Welcome to Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead, here again to talk with you about some of the stories that matter. We have got a packed show for you today to talk about some of the topics that are floating around that demand our attention. Now, I do want to note, as we get started here, as a follow-up to yesterday's show, we are very happy to announce that inmate number NN7687, a violent sexual predator who has been accused of drugging and raping over 60 women over a span of 5 decades, is now living in a single cell at a state correctional facility outside of Philadelphia. I want to note that only 3% of rapists ever go to jail. So this is indeed a rare moment. Now, isn't that interesting? If you just remove the name Bill Cosby from the equation, I'm sure you were nodding your head in agreement. Why shouldn't a violent sexual predator who has been accused of drugging and raping over 60 women over a 5-decade period, why shouldn't he be in jail? But once you have the name Bill Cosby, then it gets complicated. Folks, here on Today with Dr. K, it's not complicated at all. We are happy to announce that that is happy. He spent his last night in jail. He had his brown jumpsuit on, surrendered his watch, his jacket, his shirt. 5 decades, over 60 women. Here we go, folks. Perhaps this is a sign of things to come. It should not stop with Bill Cosby. Matt Lauer, we're coming for you. Weinberg, we're coming for you. Weinstein, we're coming for you. Moonves, we're coming for you. And for everyone who has done this, Kavanaugh, we're coming for you if you indeed are guilty of these crimes. We are coming for you. Hashtag Me Too. Hashtag Time's Up. I want to do a couple of mentions as we get started as well. Today in the New York Times, if you have an opportunity, go pick it up, because there's a full-page ad in the New York Times featuring the names of 1,600 men with a banner message saying, "We believe Anita Hill. We also believe Christine Blasey Ford." This is a Me Too era moment. on something that happened 27 years ago. At that time, it was 1,600 black women who took out a full-page ad in the New York Times to stand by Anita Hill. We believe Anita Hill, African-American women in defense of ourselves. This is Anita Hill, who said she suffered while working for Judge Clarence Thomas, who ended up being confirmed to the U.S. Supreme Court, and we have seen the long-term impact of that. Wednesday's ad, which I think is interesting, was organized by a feminist advocacy group called the Phenomenal Women Action Campaign, named in tribute, of course, to Maya Angelou, her poem Phenomenal Women. The group put out a call online for funding over the weekend. I was happy to donate my money, my name, and my time to this particular effort. We believe Anita Hill. We also believe Christine Blasey Ford, 1,600 men. New York Times, pick it up if you have an opportunity. The ad says the following: as men who are allies in the fight to end violence and harassment against women and girls, we write to express our full support of Dr. Christine Blasey Ford. We believe survivors. Let that just sink in for a second. We believe survivors. And we call on all men of goodwill to stand with us. This ad also has a plea for what's happening in our culture. And it says, for decades, a culture of misogyny has allowed men to act with impunity and without consequences. We demand an end to that culture, and we pledge to do our part in dismantling it. Want to just put out a bit of a mention. If you have an opportunity, go by and pick up a copy of the New York Times. Get that full page ad. Get it saved for posterity. We have a couple of birthdays today. Birthdays that are worth mentioning. Now, if this is your birthday and I'm not mentioning it, doesn't mean you're not important. We just don't know. Just let us know. But there are two people we wanted to mention and highlight. One is my super shero, because today, back in 1936, Winnie Mandela was born in Bazani in the eastern coast of South Africa. She was a social worker, a South African anti-apartheid activist, and a politician. She served as a member of parliament from 1994 to 2003, and from 2009 until her death, she was also a deputy minister from 1994 to 1996. She was a member of the African National Congress, the ANC. She served on the ANC's National Executive Committee and headed its Women's League. Now, we know her as Winnie Mandela, Madikizela. I want to make sure I'm saying that correctly. Madikizela Mandela is what they called her. And Madikizela Mandela stands for Mother of the Nation. Now, if you know a lot about Winnie Mandela, you also know that she married anti-apartheid activist Nelson Mandela in Joburg in 1958. They remained married for 38 years and had two children together. In 1963, after he was in prison following his trial, she became the public face for this movement during the 27 years he spent in jail. Now, those of us are calling Johannesburg Joburg. It's just a shortened nickname for Johannesburg. I have a little clip of Winnie Mandela. I want to play that as a tribute for her and her birthday.
We have called on the nations, particularly Britain, America, France, and all the other countries that have been vetoing the question of sanctions against South Africa. We have called on these nations to help us shake off apartheid. This call has been escalating now because of the present political situation in the country. We are calling on all those who have shown their sympathy, their solidarity with the oppressed people of South Africa to show their solidarity more than ever before. The country has been plunged into the worst violence any land has ever seen without a formal declaration of war. Pretoria has decided to eliminate our leadership, not only by putting them behind bars. Pretoria has adopted a new stand to eliminate opponents of apartheid by actually killing them. Our children are dying in the streets. Our parents are dying. The country generally is in a state of turmoil. We know of no alternative to that violence other than a call to our friends to apply sanctions at this hour.
We're celebrating the birthday of Winnie Mandela, born this day in 1936. Today is also the birthday of Serena Williams. She turns 36 years old today. She was ranked number one in the world by the Women's Tennis Association on 8 separate occasions between 2002 and 2017. She reached the number one ranking for the first time on July 8, 2002. On her 6th occasion, she held the ranking for 186 consecutive weeks, tying the record that was previously set by Steffi Graf for the most consecutive weeks as number one by a female tennis player. Now, I'm not going to go too far into talking about Serena Williams because I am under the belief that we all know who Serena Williams is. We all know that she is the GOAT, the greatest of all time. And I don't just mean as a tennis player. I'm talking as an athlete. She consistently brings it all onto the court. I am impressed by Serena, not just her work in the ring as a tennis player, but her work as a mother, watching what she's doing with her privilege, watching the way she's bending it. We have a quick little piece we want to play from Serena Williams because she did something earlier this week where she stripped naked and sang a line from the 1991 smash hit, I Touch Myself, in preparation for Breast Cancer Awareness Month, which is in October. It's a 9-second teaser video shown on Sunday, shows a 23-time Grand Slam tennis champion bare-naked singing one of the memorable lines from the song. She's teamed up with the I Touch Myself Project, which was launched in partnership with a bra manufacturer, and it's to bring awareness to breast cancer, and it's to remind women to check their breast for signs of breast cancer. I want to play that clip and then we'll go from there.
The I Touch Myself song was to let everyone know that it's important to touch yourself and check up on yourself. It's putting myself in a very vulnerable moment, but just to make a huge statement, I think is really important.
Serena Williams talking about checking your breast. This is a call out for women and NIDA at for men, because men can also be impacted by breast cancer, to check their breast on a regular basis. Think about the fact that Breast Cancer Awareness Month is next month. It starts in October. We will be talking about it during the month of October. We definitely send shout outs to any survivors of breast cancer, and we definitely keep you in mind as we go into the next month. Moving into today's conversation, when I said we had a hot topic, that's what I meant, because the list came out. The FBI released their list earlier today, and on this list it says, and you might be surprised, some of us were not, that Baltimore homicide rates topped the biggest U.S. cities in 2017. Baltimore had the worst homicide rate among the nation's 50 largest cities last year and the second highest violent crime rate overall. This is according to new data from the FBI. Now, what makes me angry, I'm going to put a pin here, what makes me so angry is that the FBI cannot track how many unarmed black folks get killed by the police, but they're definitely keeping track to let us know that here in Baltimore City, once again, we have the worst homicide rate. Hey, let's count both. Don't just count the homicides, also count what's happening with unarmed black folks being shot and killed by the police. I'm putting out a call right now to the FBI to do that. What is interesting is that this grim news, and it was reported in the Baltimore Sun and across other networks, is just a reminder of the sustained cycle of violence that we've had in this city since 2015. That was a year of the murder of Freddie Gray, with the uprising that took place afterwards. And that's also the year when the annual number of homicides soared above 300 for 3 consecutive years. This is right after the unrest. We have not been able to turn this city back around since then. And we're trying to figure out. Now, I know we drill down deep and we talk about what's happening in the schools. I blame the schools too. We drill down deep. We talk about what's happening in the neighborhoods. I blame the neighborhoods too. We drill down deep and talk about what our politicians aren't doing and what the cops are doing. I blame both of them. But I think there's something else we have to investigate. And we have touched on this show before. We've talked about who is it that should lean in. We had a conversation earlier this week on Monday when I was talking about, and I shared a letter from a grandfather where he was saying his grandson had been killed and he was taking responsibility. I've been asked the question whether or not black men should lean in. Older black men, should you lean in and see it as your responsibility to help us save these young brothers. Many of you said yes, but a number of you said no. A number of you said it is not your responsibility. You're only responsible for your family, for your children, for your grandchildren. Well, folks, as a follow-up to that, Baltimore City has the worst homicide rate among the nation's 50 largest cities. Now, I was with T.J. Smith last night on the panel, and he said something. He said that there's a community here in Baltimore, that community over where Freddie Gray lived, where black men are dying at a rate that astonishes him. Black men, young men, are getting shot and killed at astonishing rates. So when I said that we were losing a generation, maybe I should be more specific, because maybe you're thinking, well, you know, we seem to be fine. We're losing a generation here in Baltimore. So why don't we drill down deep and talk about our city? Because we are losing a generation of our young black men. I am trying to figure out how we can be okay if they are either one, shooting and killing each other at astounding rates. I mean, T.J. Smith to say he was astounded by these rates, by the number of homicides that are taking place right here in Baltimore City. Two, by the rising rates, we start talking about the juvenile justice system and what is happening with young black men. I mean, I want to ask the question, where are our young black men? And does it even matter to you? It matters to me. It matters to me that they're not graduating from high school at astounding rates. It matters to me that they're not going on to college at astounding rates. It matters to me that they're not going on to live their life and be the best that they can be in astounding rates. It matters to me. And I'm wondering if it matters to you. And if so, what can we do? There were 342 homicides in Baltimore last year, 56 per 100,000 people who live in the city. That's the highest per capita in the city's history. Let that just percolate for just a moment. We're talking about numbers that have never been seen before, the highest in our history. And that's according to the FBI's report. It's the highest rate of any American city with more than 500,000 people. And let's be clear, right now, Baltimore only has about 670,000 people. That's it. The city is getting smaller in terms of people who are moving here. 670,000. Anybody else remember when Stephanie Rollins Blake talked about having all these families moving to Baltimore? That was her, you know, her neighborhoods project. Well, that didn't work because folks are not moving here. Folks are actually moving out. We are now topping records that we had hoped that we wouldn't see anymore. Councilman John Bullock, who's quoted in this article, said, "Sometimes it does seem, I won't say hopeless, but there are neighborhoods that are crying out." And Councilman John Bullock is in the West and Southwest Baltimore District, and they have seen some of the worst violence. Think about that. Our neighborhoods are crying out. Now, that's what Councilman Bullock said. I just want to just turn that a little bit, right? Because I think we have to make it more personal. Like, the neighborhoods as a whole are crying out, according to Councilman Bullock. I'm going to say that our young black men are crying out. If this is not a cry for help, if this is not a cry for you to lean in, then what is? Give me a call. Let's talk about it. 410-319-8888. Baltimore City has the worst homicide rate among the nation's 50 largest cities. Can we do anything about it? Doesn't even matter to you. I'm not sure, folks. I'm not sure, because if it mattered to you, then we have to come up with some solutions. Now, we have talked about this before. I understand. They need to go to school. Yes, they do. They need to get off the street corner. Yes, they do. They need to have some job training. Yes, they do. Yes to all of the above. Well, while we're waiting for all those yeses to come into place, Baltimore City young black men are killing each other at astounding rates, folks. Astounding. I was surprised. I mean, I knew that we were not doing that well. We're at 216 homicides so far this year. I knew that. But to realize that this is the highest per capita in our city's history, that is a startling revelation, because we think of all the work we're doing, it's not coming up and leading to anything. 410-319-8888. We got to figure out what is going on. Now, Mayor Catherine Pugh She says she's been attempting to curb the killings by attacking the root cause of poverty and lack of opportunity that fuel the violent drug trade. She said that so far this year, the number of killings is down 15% from last year. So I don't know what that means. So we're down 15% from last year, but folks, we're still in high numbers. 216 is still too many. And that's only if you're talking about homicides. Let's talk about shootings, because we do have a problem. It just came out today that here in Baltimore City, school officials noted that two students each brought a gun to school, and one of the guns were fired. One of them. The two guns were recovered inside Mari Faring Elementary Middle School at 300 Pontiac Avenue in Baltimore City. The school official said the two students who each brought a gun, they were in the boys' bathroom when one of those guns were fired. Now, nobody was injured. One juvenile was taken into custody, but I'm trying to figure out, how are we turning things around when we have elementary, middle school students taking guns to school, going into the bathroom and firing one of those guns? Now, the school was placed down on lockdown. The police quickly identified and detained the two students. The guns were confiscated and secured, and the parents were notified. But folks, to me, this is just another sign that whatever direction that we think we're moving in, we're not moving fast enough. Like, we got to quickly turn this ship around. I feel like a voice crying out in the wilderness, because we've been saying the same thing since 2015. It is 2018. What are we doing to turn this ship around? Young black men here in Baltimore City are killing each other at astounding rates. They are crying out for help. So how do we respond? 410-319-8888. I have Paul on the phone. Paul, how are you?
I'm fine, Dr. K. Thanks for taking my call. Look,
absolutely.
I'm in West Baltimore. I just came from down by Catherine Street. From there, I was on Baltimore Street, down by Carolina Street. And I'm going to tell you something. For every 20 houses, that's about 8 or 9 that's vacant, that's abandoned, that's torn down. You know, and I'm looking at the young people on the phone. What do they have to look up to when you, when your house next door, the roof is caving and all that? You know, it hurts me. And I want every voter on here to understand what I'm saying. You guys keep putting the same old people in office.
Mm.
Come on, the councilmen, everybody. These are the same people for the last few years that we have in office, and they're not doing nothing. Anytime you can spend money on security for a Ray Lewis parade to honor him for making it to the Hall of Fame when he no longer lives in Baltimore.
Right.
I understand his legacy is here, and I don't want to take nothing away from what he rightfully earned and what he worked hard for, but how people are dying. You know, I looked at a police car that just pulled over. Four African-American men in the car. They got them all out on the ground. I see white guys coming in the city buying dope, buying this and doing that, and not once do they get pulled over.
Right.
But now on, Dr. K,
right,
if there's any black person that's trying to take a high position in this city, if you're not going to do your job, please move out the way and let somebody else do what they're going to do, because right now our city is crying out, but here's the problem. It's not the young voters, because according to statistics, young people are not voting. It's you old voters.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You old voters,
I agree.
That listen to this show.
I agree.
Y'all keep putting young and everybody else back in office, and they're not doing nothing for our communities. I'm in an area now. It's sad. It's pathetic. It's so pathetic to see houses torn down and people living next door to abandoned houses with the roof caved in. The city can't buy these houses? You gotta be kidding me.
Well, hold on now, Paul. Wait, now, Paul, now I have a question there, because we were talking. We had Mary Pat Clark on the show, and she was talking about the $1 house. You remember that? Well, she said that they put a new plan back for $1. If you qualify, you have a job, you'll be able to buy those houses and turn those around. Mary Pat told us that last year, so I'm trying to figure out how that's not being implemented. Why not let people buy the houses and begin to turn this thing around?
Dr. K, now, here's the problem with that. Who wants to move in the city with all the killing going on? Come on now.
Yeah, well, we got to find a way, though, Paul, right?
Now, here's the problem. Here's the problem. Keep in mind, years ago, the city bought those houses, these same abandoned houses. Where I used to live at, on Loretta Avenue, The city bought those houses. They gave them to Section 8, and they terrorized that place.
Right.
Now, some of these same houses that have that abandoned, if you look into vital records, you'll find out that the city owned a lot of these abandoned houses. It belonged to the city of Baltimore.
And they're letting them fall down around us. Thank you so much, Paul. We're going to hold it here for just a second, folks. When we come back, let's go through this article a little bit more, because you would be surprised to know who we top, who's number two on the list, who's number three. You would be surprised that Baltimore City is sitting at the top of this list again. We'll talk about that when we return. This is Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. Stay with us.
Jazz is an essential part of the universal language of music, one that anyone can understand and connect to. Music like this deserves a secure home on the radio dial. Become a part of the team that helps make great jazz possible. Do your part now by making a donation to keep jazz on public radio 88.9 alive and well. Go to WEAA.org and click the Donate Now button. Thank you for listening.
Every day, there are musically gifted young people who aspire to be in the spotlight. They dream to be just as successful as the artists who inspired them to create their very own music. Join Robert Shaheed in Masterclass as he highlights such gifted individuals that absolutely need to be heard. Monday through Friday at noon, only on WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community.
Your source for cool jazz and more. WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community.
Welcome back to Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. We're having a conversation here about what is taking place right now in Baltimore City. The FBI released a list today where it says that Baltimore had the worst homicide rate among the nation's largest 50 cities, the 50 largest cities last year, and the second highest violent crime rate overall. This is according to new data from the FBI. There were 342 homicides in Baltimore last year, 56 per 100,000 people who live in the city. Think about that. That's the highest per capita in the nation's history, our city's history. And according to the FBI report on Monday, the highest rate of any American city with more than 500,000 people. Baltimore City. Do note that we only have about 670,000 people here in Baltimore City. The mayor says she's been trying to get to the root of the problem. She believes the root causes of poverty and there's a lack of opportunity that fuel the violent drug trade, and she's trying to get to that. She said, our efforts to reduce violent crime are producing clear results. Crime is declining in every category. And once again, she rolled out all the statistics about the Violence Reduction Initiative and everything she's doing, except I'm trying to connect Mayor Pugh's statements in the Baltimore Sun to what I heard T.J. Smith say last night. T.J. Smith said, if you go over to the East Baltimore community, if you go to where Freddie Gray lived, that black men, young black men, are killing themselves at astounding rates. He just said that last night. So even though, on one hand, we have the mayor saying, you know, well, it's going down. Things are getting better. The Violent Reduction Initiative is working. We're putting streetlights up. We're having employment services. At the same time, young black men are killing each other at astounding rates. When I say we're losing a generation, and I said this on Monday, folks, we're losing a generation of black men in Baltimore. Maybe I just need to drill down. Maybe when you heard me say we're losing a generation, you thought I was talking about the whole nation, right? I'm talking about all 50 states. It's like, okay, we can't be losing a generation in all 50 states. That has nothing to do with us here. Let's make it personal. We're losing a generation of young black men here in Baltimore City because they are killing each other at astounding rates. So Bullock said, John Bullock, councilman said, hey, the neighborhoods are crying out. I'm saying maybe it's not the neighborhoods that are crying out. Maybe it's our young black men who are crying out. Detroit, which had the highest overall crime rate for 2017, ranked number 2 in homicides with 40 per 100,000 people. Memphis, Tennessee followed with 28 homicides per 100,000. Chicago came next with 24 per 100,000. Then Philadelphia and then Milwaukee. Baltimore top Detroit, Chicago. Come on, folks, Philly. The FBI defines violent crimes as a combination of murder, non-negligent manslaughter, rape, robbery, and aggravated assault. Well, who in the world wants to live in a city that has this kind of violent crime rate? High rates of murder, high rates of non-negligent manslaughter, high rates of rape, high rates of robbery, high rates of aggravated assault. The FBI is saying, who is the one at the top of the list? Baltimore City. They are talking about us. So far this year, there have been 216 homicides in Baltimore. But you know what? Don't worry, because they went and they talked to Governor Larry Hogan. Yes. Let's hear what he had to say. He said that the FBI data is shocking and disappointing, but it doesn't come as a complete surprise. Hey, maybe if you had given us the subway system, maybe it would have helped this. Maybe if you would release our funds for the schools, Governor Hogan, maybe it would help this. Maybe if you stop calling us the hole in the middle of the donut and acting like we don't matter, maybe you could have turned this around. No, no, you're shocked and disappointed, but you are not surprised. You know what? If I had my foot on somebody's neck, I wouldn't be surprised if they couldn't breathe. I mean, I might be shocked that they can't breathe. I might be disappointed that they can't breathe. But believe me, it doesn't come as a complete surprise if my foot is on your throat and you're on the ground that you can't breathe. Hey, put the subway system. How about doing that? Hey, release the fundings for our schools. How about doing that? How about stop holding us hostage to your political agenda? How about that? Then you don't have to be, I don't know, shocked and disappointed. Baltimore City sits at the top. The governor is shocked and disappointed. The mayor says, no, the Violent Crime Reduction Initiative is working. I'm saying none of it's working. The young black men are killing each other at astounding rates, and our young black men are crying out. So what are you going to do about it? 410-319-8888. I have Bill on the phone from Northeast Baltimore. Bill, how are you?
I'm good. First and foremost, thank you very much. But, you know, let me say this to Dr. K. There's a lot of things that need to be done. There's a lot of solutions. I think the real question is that, do we really want solutions, those of us in position to really make the solutions happen?
Mm.
And when I say that, I'm saying this. You know, people make money from people being in poverty. So, you know,
everybody doesn't want
poverty to stop.
Yes.
People make money from people going to jail. So everybody don't want people to stop going to jail, right?
Right. All right.
You know, I said to you before, and this is an issue we've been pushing for over 30 years, which I'm confident and I know for sure that we could reduce crime overnight. If we would have citizens to witness the incineration process of all the drugs and weapons that the police confiscate, if we would take a portion of the money that the police confiscate from these communities and earmark it to go directly back into this community, then we could start turning the city around overnight. But the problem is that it's a $1 billion industry.
It is.
There's no way that we can have them drugs and weapons destroyed that the police confiscate, because if it happens, you will have war between the mafia and the government, just like you did before alcohol was legalized. Alcohol was not legalized because it was the right thing to do. It was the government trying to decide a way how a compromise could happen between the mafia and the people selling illegal alcohol. So drugs, we stand on the same thing we stood on when you had the mafia and the gangsters fighting over alcohol.
Right.
But that's a position nobody don't want to touch. We don't want to say, well, yeah, that makes sense. Let's make sure that the citizens can witness the instructions of all the drugs and weapons that's being confiscated off the street. That way we would know what's being destroyed and what's been confiscated.
I completely agree with you. But I agree with you. I agree. But you're talking, but you know what? Hold on, Bill. You're talking about disrupting a $1 billion industry. And they're not going to let us disrupt that $1 billion industry so we can save our communities. I mean, they don't have any concern about saving our communities. They don't care.
But that's what I'm saying. So it's not like we don't have solutions. There is solutions out there. But, you know, the question is that, do we really want to save ourselves?
No.
You know what I'm saying?
No.
Do we really want the people to be saved? Is it too much money in terms of letting the people go down the way that we're going down.
Yeah, I don't think they do. Thank you so much, Bill. Hey, folks, let me throw this out because I talked about what's going on with the money. I got this off of Jane Miller's Twitter account. She said that 7 of the 10 top paid people in Baltimore City for last year. Listen to this, folks. 7 of the 10. This is the 10 top paid folks in Baltimore City. 7 of them are police officers. Sergeant Will Harris, number one. His salary as a police officer is $100,228. That makes sense. He's a cop. Well, his gross was $250,000. All of that extra money over the $100,000 base was overtime. So we're paying our cops about $150,000 in overtime to one man. He topped the list. 7 of the top 10 were cops. I'm trying to figure out when we get surprised at what's happening in our community, when we wonder why we still have a boot on the neck of Baltimore City residents, we need to look at where we're spending our money. Where you spend your money is where your heart is. My daddy always said that. He said, I know what you care about. Show me your checkbook. Wherever you're spending your money, that's what you care about. So we know that Baltimore City doesn't care too much about our neighborhoods. Doesn't care too much about our babies, doesn't care too much about our roads, but it does care about our police officers who are, incidentally, some of them actually do what we call predatory policing. Not all of them. Maybe just a cop that beat the boy up that we saw the video from a couple of weeks ago. Maybe just a cop that got out of the car and beat the man up. We saw that video a couple of weeks ago. Maybe just those cops. But they're making a ton of money if 7 of the 10 top paid people in Baltimore City last year were police officers. Our young black men are crying out because, according to T.J. Smith, they are killing each other at astounding rates. I'm blown away, folks. Let's talk about it. 410-319-8888. I have Darren on the phone. Darren's a new caller from Sandtown. Darren, welcome to the family.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing well.
That's good. That's good.
So what do you think, Darren?
Yeah, I'm listening to what everybody is saying, and everybody has a very good point, you know, and I appreciate you addressing the issue. Yeah. Now, I live in Sandtown, and, you know, I can't rest at night really good because I'm always alert. You know, people party at crazy times. I mean, after 11, you know.
And right.
It's kind of mad. It makes you want to come out there and just, you know, raise some hell. But knowing that a lot of these people don't have jobs,
yeah.
So they don't have any respect for, you know, people that's got to work and get up 4 and 5 in the morning. So I'm feeling like, you know, some of these people just need some jobs,
right?
You know, they need some alternative education, you know, because evidently they ain't going to school, and the ones that are making the bribes, not the young people that are doing, you know, the straight and narrow things and the great things,
right?
But the ones
right.
that are cutting up in these urban neighborhoods. They need some trades. They need some, you know, some more access to some workshops and some trades, so they can. They may not was able to sit in them classes and get that education, or they may not have had the background or the support to finish school. And now they're being a fucking nuisance. So I think they need some trades, you know, so they can slide into some of these jobs, you know. And
well, see, let me ask you this. Hold on, though. I got to ask you this because I'm all down for the training. You know, I'm with the training. I'm just trying to figure out, Darren, how do we get young brothers? And now I'm talking specifically about the young brothers on the street. If your son's in college, I'm not talking about him. If your son's holding his grades up at City, I'm not talking about him. I'm specifically talking about the young brothers shooting and killing on the street because they're involved in an illegal trade right now. So how do we get them to give up all the cash they're bringing in right now, Darren, in hopes mm-hmm. of getting training and going into a job that's a legal job, but they're not going to make as much money off the top like they're doing right now?
Well, we need some kind of community organizer that can take a group of guys from that area and maybe outside the area, you know.
Yeah.
We need a community organizer or something to come in and ground a group of men in the area how to reach, you know, how to not fall through them cracks, you know. So it's got to start right there in the area. So we need somebody to come in the area and train a group of us, including me, to help reach these young people, you know, and give them an
opportunity. We got to do something.
You know,
All right. We got to do something.
They only going by what they see, like you see every day. It's nothing like the dude says. It's nothing to look at in that, some of these urban neighborhoods. They don't offer no kind of inspiration.
Nothing.
From the time you get up to the time you go to sleep. So, I mean, we use the word "got love" in the hood, you know, but how much love is in the hood, like you say, when the results are ending up, people getting murdered.
That's what I'm trying to figure out. Thank you so much. Folks, I'm just wondering. I'm just thinking about what Darren said, right? So we got to get some job training programs. We got to get our young brothers out. I'm all with that. I am with job training programs. I'm just trying to figure out how can we get our brothers, and I'm talking specifically about the ones who are in the game right now, who are living the life right now. How do we get them to give that up? Give up that money, the money that they may be being used to take care of family members, right? I mean, I want to be real here. Let's be completely 100% transparent today, right? Let's have a real conversation on the air. Some of the brothers that are out here dealing drugs, that money is being used to take care of their family members, perhaps take care of their mother, perhaps take care of their kids, their siblings. That's real talk, right? So we know the money is not just to buy a big car. Sometimes it's just paying rent. How do we get them to give that up and say, let's go into job training so you can get a job making minimum wage and you can work your way up? How do we get them off the street? Anybody remember, and I'm going to go back to your calls, but I was just thinking about, remember that documentary, The Boys of Baraka? If you've never seen that documentary, The Boys of Baraka, but it was about how they took 20 12-year-old black boys, 20 of them, from one of the most violent communities in Baltimore, Maryland. They took them 100,000 miles away to an experimental boarding school in rural Kenya to try to educate them. So that said to me when I saw that the only way we can educate our boys in Baltimore City, the only way we can save our boys in Baltimore City, the only way we can help our boys in Baltimore City is to ship them off to Kenya to educate them in a rural neighborhood. Folks, come on now. If that's the only solution that will save these boys, then I'm all for it. Alex Boston chimed in from Facebook Live. He said, you know what? Insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. Albert Einstein said that. Insanity. Right now in Baltimore City, it's insane. Sandra Walker said, hey, what happened to the city curfew? Sandra, that curfew was only in certain black communities, because in a lot of white communities, well, there was no curfew at all. Mount Washington had no curfew. Hamilton had no curfew. Over in Fells Point, no curfew. So let's be clear about the curfew and what they set up for our communities. 410-319-8888. We have Lee on the phone from Virgin Islands. Lee, how are you?
I'm very fine. I want to say this. When I was a kid, we did construction, home improvement, and my dad told me back then, you learn the craft or die. You choose which one you want. And I chose to live, so I learned the craft. Now I come to America, and I notice a lot of the students here, of course, they don't have any skills, and there's nobody teaching them the craft. And
right.
Back when I was growing up, they had trade schools. And so those kids who don't, they're not the best students, but they like using their hands. And because of the fact that there's no trade school, like that's why I see a lot of these kids on the corner. They want to work, but when they come to a construction site or anywhere else, the only thing they could do is basically clean the place up because they have no skills whatsoever.
Right.
And that's the problem I see. If the city would take some of that money that they have, that they get in there, and all these buildings that they have, hire some of these kids to start cleaning those buildings out. Because the problem is, I see now a lot of these investors are coming up from the district and Virginia.
Right.
And they're looking at these homes. And if the city wants to actually help their kids, have them start cleaning those buildings up and making the area look nice. Investors come in and get these buildings up.
Right.
And everybody wins. But first, you got to start with at least teaching them a skill. You help them use their hands. And
that
will get them off the street. And if they're realizing... Now, if you want to eat, then you could do some kind of home improvement. You would always eat.
Yeah, no, I like that. Teach them a trade. I mean, I know a lot of men, just only a few men, who were in prison, learned a trade while they were in prison, Lee. They've come out of jail since then. They've been able to make decent livings
coming out.
I mean, I know a brother who studied being a barber, who is now pulling down $2,000 to $3,000 per week as a master barber. I know a brother who, I'm just thinking, they went to jail, learned a trade, and the kind of money they're making now, taking care of their family, families now. There is life and success on the other side of prison.
That is what I'm talking about.
Yes.
I just believe that for a lot of folks who look at immigrants who come to this country and start a business, because our family taught us a trade when before we get here.
Trade. I'm with you.
We don't mind starting at the bottom and working and keeping our heads down and working to get what we want to get. My dad always tell me, when you come to America, you want to start a business and buy a home. And that's what he told me, start a business and buy a home. And that's exactly what I did.
Because there you go.
You have no voice if you don't have a home. And if you don't have a business, you can't take advantage of the taxes.
Well, you become your own boss, right? I'm gonna let you go. But Darren, what's interesting, Lee from Virgin Islands, is interesting is that the new study just came out, and that immigrants, Black immigrants, are on a 9% uptick, like the biggest group now in terms of success. Black immigrants who are more likely to have a BA, more likely to own a home earlier, more likely to have their own business. So you're tapping into something that they've been talking about on the wire a lot, that Black immigrants are definitely rising in this country.
I believe they need to do.
Thank you so much, Lee. I appreciate you. We have Lance on the phone from Baltimore. Lance, how are you?
I'm great. How about yourself?
I'm doing well, thank you. A little bit hoarse here, but I'm okay.
Sound all right.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me on. So I want to, I guess, touch on a few things. One, I forget what the last caller's name was, but what he said, as well as Darren. So I feel as though, as far as how Baltimore City goes, like I grew up in Baltimore City, like, you know, from jump. I was born here, this is where I'm from, you know. But throughout my entire life, I was never considered to have been from here, from both Baltimoreans and, you know, people from outside of the city or state. You know, people always assumed I was from somewhere else because of how I talk, what I talk about, what I'm interested in.
Right.
Having said that, I went to Baltimore City College High School and had a pretty good education there. But personally, I felt like the education itself was lacking because of how they didn't necessarily target my interests.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? So to touch on the whole thing about teaching these kids trades and things like that, if you decide to teach these kids trades, you have to be very careful about how you're going to do that, because you may rub them the wrong way into making them feel as though they are inadequate in regular school.
Okay, that's actually not a bad thing to put on the table.
And on top of that, like when you start examining that aspect, giving them trades is great, just like, you know, the previous caller just said. But it has to be trades that they feel as though are viable trades.
Right.
You can't just teach guys to be barbers, just teach guys to be construction workers. If it's going to be a construction worker, teach them how to weatherize. Teach them how to, you know, be in the environmental field.
Right.
If you want them to be able to, like, how do I say, okay, we have an issue in the city with plumbing, the fact that we still have lead pipes, right?
Right.
So for me, as being a part of Baltimore City, what I would be training kids in right now is all the areas that Baltimore is missing.
Right.
You know, if we need our plumbing and things like that fixed, whether it be at the residential level or at the commercial or, you know, public-owned level, then you should be teaching those kids those trades that literally have a direct translation and be able to give them field trips or direct connection to what that translates into in the real world, beyond just, you know, saying, okay, we're going to train you to be a construction worker. Okay, great. Now I'm just, an entry-level construction worker who's making maybe $16 an hour. Whereas, you know, we were just talking about, you know, the barber that's pulling in like $2,000 a week.
Right.
You know, he may or may not be making as much as, you know, my homeboy that rides on the corner every day.
Right.
You know, and even in saying that, these kids are very understanding of the fact that life is dangerous, right? They don't actually want to be a part of that life when they get to a certain age.
Right.
I would say between maybe 12 and maybe 18, there is a mystique there that's like, oh, I'm hard, I'm gangster, I can do all of this, I can sell this, I can shoot you, I can take your girl, et cetera, et cetera. But once you get past 18 and those laws start to hit you, the guys that are running around, everybody's got a gun now. You know, it's not just you and your boys. Everybody can get their hands on the gun now. that world becomes a lot less inviting.
I mean, it's like, I feel like you start aging out. Again, I don't know the lifestyle, but I just can't imagine a 25-year-old, 27-year-old. At some point, it's got to catch up with you.
I mean, it definitely does. But usually, like, if you've made it to, I mean, Kanye West said it the best, drug dealing just to get by. You know, I could have, he was supposed to die by the time he was You know, he said, I should have got killed at 21, but I made it all the way to 25. You know, like that's a victory song. You know what I'm saying? But it you know, alludes to a much greater negativity.
It does. and the ways in which we see certain people and certain communities as being disposable.
Exactly.
Because we don't have white kids saying, you know, I'm going to make, if I make it to 25, that's a big, no, they're already planning for futures. And I don't mean every white child. I'm just talking, you know, very broadly about the ways in which we educate our children, even from a young age, to have and imagine and dream of a future for themselves.
Exactly. And I want to say one more thing.
Sure.
Now, about the, you know, how do we get these kids off the street, per se? Honestly, like, I feel as though there needs to be more of a conversation with these kids that technically we're targeting for a better life, you know, prior to them getting to, you know, jail, prior to them getting to the juvenile detention aspect of it. There should be more of a conversation of, you know, what do you wish you had in your community that you don't have? You know, actually go straight to them and understand what they feel as though they're missing. If you can fill that void, or at least begin to create, you know, the sequestering of that void, you know, we can actually start having a whole lot better conversations. It'll be less, you know, a bunch of adults standing around saying, hey, what do you think they need? You know, like we get so angry being like, you know, in the black community, like, oh man, like gentrification's coming in. They're coming in, taking our neighborhood, not asking us what we need. We're doing the same thing to our kids.
All right. I'm going to stop you there. Thank you so much, sir. We have Casey on the phone from Northeast Baltimore. Casey, you want to talk about the governor?
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing well.
I guess the first thing, I'm listening to the program as I do often. You know, we always want to point the finger toward Annapolis, you know, especially having a Republican governor. I have to say, I'm a Democrat. I've lived in the city for over 20 years now. And what's problematic to me is that we haven't had a Republican in Baltimore City in over 40 years. You know, there hasn't been an elected Republican. You know, McKeldin was the last elected Republican. And we have to look at it from this standpoint, that well over 70% of our elected officials are African-American in this city. You know, when I listen to someone like Mary Pat Clark, and I listen to people, you know, talk about, you know, recite from Mary Pat Clark, you know, that's a problem to me, because Mary Pat's been a problem in the city for a number of years also. It's time for the old guard to go. The city needs to start with the city and correcting its problems. You know, our anathema is not that man in Annapolis. Our problem is the elected officials that we have here in Baltimore City, because we're recycling the same politicians that are keeping us undereducated and underemployed. Mm. That's where the problem. The red line was not our savior. You know, the state project is not our savior. You know, the school budget is underfunded because of something that a delegate did in Baltimore City.
Where is the money, by the way? Where is the money?
And that was because of the formula that was corrupted. So, I mean, we have to look at this. We have to look at this, you know, from a different vantage point, and we're not doing that. Our problem is with our elected officials not going down there representing us properly. That's where the problem comes in. And until we decide to turn the mirror on ourselves and say that we've created this problem, it's never going to change.
Well, you know what, Casey? I'm actually agreeing with you. Our first caller, Paul, said the same thing. Stop electing the same people. Now, I talked about Mary Pat today because I remember Mary Pat said on my show, hey, we're going to do these dollar houses. I'm like, where are the dollar houses? Where are the houses?
Don't make sense.
Yeah, I'm like,
they don't. They don't, the reason they don't make sense is because no one's moving back into
those
homes.
That's what I'm saying.
They're going into new developments. So what the governor did with Project Core made sense. Now the ball is back in the city's court. But now that we've leveled and we've taken away a third of the cost of developers, you know, it's all about money, folks.
Yes, it is.
When we've taken away a third of the cost from developers, and we've allowed developers to come in and build the things that we want built in the city. And then when we look at things like the police officers, you said the seven top employees or paid employees were
police officers.
That's not necessarily, you know, what's problematic about it, because what's problematic about that statement is that doesn't say that we're paying police officers more. What it's saying is that we have a problem with our hiring and our retention. That's why they're getting so much overtime.
Because they don't have enough police. And then the mayor said that. She has said a number of times she needs more.
As a business owner, I get that. But what are we going to do to change it ourselves? One of the major problems to all of this for me, and I'm gonna wrap this up. I apologize.
No, I appreciate you calling.
Think about this. We've got almost 5 HBCUs within a 50-mile radius.
Yes.
And I'm not going to put anybody on blast. But I know specifically of a fraternity that has, their alumni chapter has 100-plus members, but they only took in 10 young African-American boys from the community to mentor.
And then
one person could have done that.
Come on.
So think about it. We got to take responsibility for our own stuff.
Until
we start doing that, it ain't going to change.
I'm so glad you called, Casey. I appreciate you. I like to push it back. We're talking real talk here. So thank you for calling, Casey. So, folks, we're going to hold it here for just a break. When we come back, Leroy, Cookie, Lolita, Valerie, Glord, I am coming to you, folks. Baltimore City, once again, has topped the list in terms of homicides. No, it's not a good list. Again, it's a bad list and a bad look for our city. We're going to talk about that when we come back.